FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and 12/24/19. Well, end of the year. We've seen this year second highest number of CEOs step down. Google, we've got a new caretaker or figurehead, or I don't know what he is, but let's talk about that a little bit. What are your feelings about Google and the tech oligarchy? How do we rein them in and ensure that they're not affecting our lives, our system, our political system any more than is absolutely necessary? TG Watkins of Simpler Trading is with us now. TG, welcome back. And so when we look at the recent moves with Google, who was it? Sergey Brin stepped down, and now Sundar Pichai is supposedly running the show. Larry Page also stepped down. I'd be remiss not mentioning that. What's the real significance of that move? Because Google, very important company, both to the United States and the world economic system, e-commerce, everything kind of goes back to Google. What is life with Google shaping up to be now?
Well, you're right that we are to wonder what that really means. There are a couple facets to look at this. One, at one point, there were three people at the top of the company. So it's a little bit difficult to steer a company when you have three people as leaders. And so now that they've that Sergey and Larry have stepped down, now we have one person to look at, one person to lead the ship. And I think that might be a little bit more streamlined in that case. Other people have been looking around saying, well, what's the significance of them stepping down? Right now, it's a little bit hard to pinpoint. Some are saying that it's concerned that they don't want to be in the hot water when it comes to the antitrust. Others have kind of been saying, well, look, I mean, they've made a lot of money. They've been doing this for a lot of years. Maybe they just want to kind of take the spotlight off them and go do something else with their money and while they're still decently young. And it's kind of hard to blame them in that case. And then, as you mentioned earlier, this is the second highest year, only surpassed by 2008, that we've had seen the highest number of CEO turnovers. So I don't know. Maybe it's just also a wave that's been a coincidence.
Yeah. Well, they are under a lot of heat. There have been a lot of a lot of things leaked out of the company about their political agenda, manipulation of algorithms on YouTube and on Google. And basically, no wonder they gave up the statement of values which first was do no evil. Maybe Google has become quintessential evil now.
Yeah, and then don't be evil, all that kind of stuff. And I agree, as you said earlier, that what are we going to do about these situations where it's not necessarily the politicians or it's not necessarily other people in positions of power that are running our lives. It's the tech companies that are getting in there. The fact that we're all using these same or just a handful of platforms that they can get in there and manipulate things that we can't see, like Twitter with their shadow banning. We're really running into a situation where we don't necessarily know what we are seeing, what we're not seeing, and really kind of what the truth is out there. And I'm a big free speech proponent and saying that not just that the government shouldn't crack down on our speech, but we should really be able to say whatever we want out there. And when these big companies get in the middle and they do it in an invisible way, a little bit challenging for us as a society to keep operating properly.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it doesn't matter what their agenda is, what side they're on. We don't want them injecting themselves into becoming gatekeepers, if you will, who decide what you can say and what you can't say on their platform, because the platform...
Yeah, they're becoming the arbiters of morality.
Yeah, and truth. And... it doesn't matter at this point. The First Amendment, the government, shall not regulate speech. It really doesn't matter at this point because you got Google, right?
Yeah.
So
another thing that we've been seeing that I've read about and watched a lot of people talk about is that we kind of do our own self-silencing, our own self-censorship. You know, that we now, because we have social media, and we get, if we say something, we get people or friends or people who are on our friend list or Twitter following, whatever, and they come back and they do a mob tactic on us. And it's almost like we almost don't want to say anything, whether it's this way or that way, because of the repercussions and ramifications that will come back towards us just from the, you know, social media mob on whatever side. And yes, there's a lot of self-censorship that is happening. And I think that's really what we're doing this to ourselves in a way.
Yeah, that's what we call prior restraint or self-restraint, where you're worried about the repercussions and you basically decide that you're better off keeping your mouth shut than than getting banned, shadow banned, or whatever, or deplatformed. You know, this whole concept of depersoning a person on the internet is very dangerous.
Yeah, cancel culture. That's a big thing happening right now.
Yeah, and just because some people need a safe space, the safe space used to be free speech, that was going to protect all of our rights because we'd have an open and unfettered debate. And this is really anathema to the Constitution and everything that America has always stood for in the world.
Well, you think about the purpose of free speech coming from hundreds of years ago. Who didn't have free speech? You know, if you wanted to say something, you would either get hanged or shot or whatever. And nowadays, we're actually having people come back at us and saying, no, you can't say that. No, you can't say that. And so it's interesting to see this real flip, this real inversion of what free speech is and who needs it and who's it really important to. And I think that this is just a really weird thing that we haven't seen before. And I don't know if it's social media or just sometimes things go out of whack in a way, but we are seeing something like we have never seen before. And I think that we as a society are really kind of struggling on figuring out what to do about it. But, you know, I do have an optimistic look about it. I think that good things will prevail. We just might have to slog through some difficulties in the meantime.
Well, I hope you're right. And you know, it's ironic when you look at what's going on in Hong Kong, where these people are putting everything on the line for to preserve what freedoms they have and to protect or further a free society. They're even holding up American flags and putting replicas, you know, the Statue of Liberty, all these things. And they're facing a really oppressive regime that wants them gone.
You know, same thing. American flags over there, they're even saying that they wish they had the Second Amendment right over there. And I think that here in America, while, you know, we might have a gun issue here and there, you know, we were built on the idea of a Second Amendment and being able to defend ourselves against the government. And I am a little bit shocked sometimes when people don't quite see the connection. We're watching this real time modern society over in Hong Kong where, you know, I think you might want to have the Second Amendment sometimes just to say, hey, government, you know, back off.
Yeah. And you know, we're seeing this in Virginia, too, where the Bloomberg financed legislature of Virginia is seeking basically to ban most forms of firearms, all semi-automatic firearms. And the people are up in arms over it. Most of Virginia is rural and doesn't have a gun problem. The gun problem's in the cities, and really, it's rather shocking. I mean, they're declaring Second Amendment sanctuaries and talking about forming militias, which specifically is, you know, when you think about it, yes, the Second Amendment says that you have the right to keep and bear arms. But prior to that, it says a well-armed and well-maintained militia is crucial to the country. So effectively, the Second Amendment has really, an area we never really think about it, has kind of legitimized the militias.
I agree. And that Virginia thing, as you mentioned, I think is going to be a real thing that we need to watch and see what's going to happen there, because that might dictate some other directions. I hope it doesn't get messy. There might be some big protesting that comes out of that, and maybe some marching. But boy, we're going to have to watch that one because that's going to be either a powder keg or that's going to kind of tell the government what's going on. And that this is not a smart move for them.
Well, it's definitely not a smart move. When you look at it, the guys who are going to have to enforce this, meaning the sheriffs and the police and the National Guard potentially, effectively want no part of this. And yet they're marching right ahead with it to potential doom.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Today's show is brought to you by U.S. Gold Corp. U.S. Gold Corp is a U.S.-focused gold exploration and development company advancing high-potential projects in Wyoming and Nevada. U.S. Gold Corp has consolidated a district on Nevada's productive Cortex Trend and is advancing the Copper King project towards production in Wyoming. Led by a team of prolific company builders and renowned explorers, including Dave Mathewson, who is directly responsible for several major Nevada gold discoveries, U.S. Gold Corp is well-capitalized and has an extremely tight share structure with less than 20 million shares outstanding and trades on the NASDAQ, a major exchange under the ticker symbol USAU. To learn more, go to usgoldcorp.gold. That's usgoldcorp.gold.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Yeah, I don't know what to do about this one. I'm just, you know, we're talking about it. I've got a lot of friends that are very interested in this subject out there in Virginia, and I'm just going to watch and see what happens. And as I said earlier, I hope I have optimistic views about things, and I hope that the the good side will prevail as far as keeping our rights. And or I just hope it doesn't get messy either. That's the biggest thing. I hope it's peaceful.
Yeah, well, I think this has become a bridge too far, that they've really jumped the shark, if you will, and
yep,
it's going to come back and bite them. But, you know, maybe we needed this because we need to resolve this once and for all. Maybe really for the left to overstep and overreach, which seems to be their way. And speaking of that, we go to the impeachment. You're a financial person. You see the market doing nothing but going up in the face of Trump's impeachment. What is that telling you as a student of the markets?
Yeah, that's true. We're looking at this thing. It kind of tells me that maybe this impeachment doesn't have a whole lot of teeth. Because we're looking at this and saying that it seems to be mostly political. And the goalposts have been moving quite a bit. You know, I remember that we were supposed to be impeaching Trump before he even got into office. And then this is what now the third time that Trump has been trying to get impeached. And you know, what's going to be next? The goalpost keeps moving.
Yeah, well, I think, again, they've jumped the shark. They really have no idea of what they've unleashed here, and they're going to suffer the consequences of it for certain, and we're going to see it in real time, basically.
Yeah, well, you know, the market's been doing pretty well this way. I think, you know, the market does not like uncertainty, and if he either gets impeached or if he loses the election or something big changes, we're going to probably see a disruption in the market. And so, you know, a lot of times when you have a horse in the race, it's good just to keep that horse in the race until they can finish. And I think just to keep things smooth, I think that's the direction that it should probably go.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you here. So what, one thing is, I think China has come to the conclusion that Trump's going to be reelected because all of a sudden they come to the conclusion, yeah, maybe we can't take 5 more years of this trade war. It's really affecting the country, the growth rate, the factory employment. All of these things are on the decline in China, and it looks like they've made their bet.
Seems so. It's been really, really difficult to tell what is true and what's actually been happening because so many news reports come out that are absolutely conflicting. I mean, just the other week, we had something about the phase 1 deal, but then a day later, it's being reported that, oh, the reporting was incorrect. And even Trump came out on Twitter and said that CNBC or somebody who reported it didn't report it accurately. So, man, it is real challenging to tell what's really happening out there. But what I will say is that the sentiment of Trump trying to say America first and China, you've had your day, you need to play fair, and we'll take our money and our manufacturing elsewhere if we need to. I think that's a great message. I mean, we really do need to stand up to other people if we're going to be providing them as much money as we have over the decades that we've been working with them as far as our manufacturing going there.
Yeah, so it's a whole revamping of international relations and trade across the world. because Trump will stand up to everybody, anybody who he believes is doing the U.S. wrong and on the trade front.
Yeah, and I don't see anything wrong with that.
Okay. Me neither. But it certainly is upsetting the apple cart quite a bit. What do you think the final resolution, trade war and this revamping of trade relationships, where's it gonna wind up, assuming that Trump gets reelected? Because if he doesn't, then it's kind of all over.
Yeah, you just nailed it right there. So assuming that he does get reelected, I think, as you said, China is going to have to realize, okay, we're going to have to deal with this for more years. And then what I'm also kind of hoping is that this hopefully is a paradigm shift, that now that we see that some of this stuff has come to light, or we see that we were able to survive it and get through it, we can come out on the other side and maybe things actually improve, that people then be like, oh, you're right. Maybe they were kind of taking advantage of us, or now things are good. And news will come out after the fact showing that maybe there were some bigger problems and more stuff that was swept under the rug that we didn't know as we were going through it. And then I think that hopefully this sentiment of, you know, America first doesn't necessarily mean everybody else last. It just means that we need to make sure we don't keep getting stepped on, and that rules and games are played fairly, and that we have that. And I think that is this kind of shift that I'm hoping that future politicians will continue to carry forward and saying, you know what, we need to make sure that we take care of our own before we, you know, say, hey, we'll do anything to maintain a manufacturing relationship with China. No, there are other places that we can manufacture, and it's not going to be at our detriment.
Yeah, very, very true. And it's getting real interesting to see it actually go, because all the prognosticators of doom and gloom as a result of this policy, it hasn't come to pass, has it?
No, they've pretty much all been wrong. I mean, things are doing fairly well. And, if we just kind of remove some of the politics about it and the squeaky wheel that gets the grease, I think overall, you know, we got, say, the silent majority that's kind of keeping their noses down, saying, all right, you know, let's see where this goes. And we're just kind of, we all have to live our own lives, right? We're all doing our own thing. We're trying to get through the best. And so far, exactly, Things are looking all right. We got low employment. Inflation seems all right. And, the stock market's doing great.
Yeah, the stock market's doing great, and it keeps going up. And I'm always skeptical of government statistics, but I do know for a fact that the employment situation, we can debate the quality of the jobs, but jobs are an ample supply, because I know friends of mine who have businesses, a friend of mine who's in HR, and their biggest problem is they can't find qualified people. And now we're like scouring the prisons for adequate labor sources. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we can rehabilitate these people through, making them believe in the American dream and that they can play a part in it, rather than being stigmatized and really forbidden from participating in the American dream.
Well, wasn't that something that Trump did recently with that wealthy family, the Kardashians or something, and he did prison reform, if I'm not mistaken, criminal reform. So, I believe that would be a left-leaning sentiment. And he said, sure, let's go look into this. And that's something that I don't think that most people thought was going to happen. And it did.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. On the other hand, you have places like California that basically legalize or decriminalize shoplifting up to $950. You know, the way to get people out of the system isn't to make everything legal, every crime, or eliminate whole classifications of crimes. It's to really work with the people who get involved in the system and show them that they have options. I know that's difficult and it's kind of idealistic sounding, but it's not going to do any good to just eliminate whole categories of crimes, whether it's living on the street or, you know, all the things going on in California, horrible trend taking place there. So let's talk about your forecast for the coming year, for 2020. What do you see happening economically, and what do you see on the job front? International trade, which are all connected.
Well, how about Brexit? Now that they've got a new minister over there, and that they just finished their elections, Boris Johnson is now in place. That was a huge win, and I think that the stock market continued to go up after that news. I think that's part of what's fueling it. He kind of looks like a version of Trump, which is interesting. And I think that we are starting to see out there that, in fact, some of these really too far left policies and sentiments are not really what's okay with people. And I think we're bringing it back a little bit. Something you and I spoke about earlier in this segment is that sometimes we got to go someplace in order to realize that maybe it's not good to pull back. I think that's just human nature, is that we need to learn our own lessons. And we just had to go certain places and test them out. And then we kind of come back to where maybe things work. America also does a pendulum. And so looking at 2020, I'm real interested to see what goes on with Brexit, with Boris Johnson now and there, and see how that works out. That means the America and the UK can renegotiate some trade deals. And I think that'll be good. And if that starts to really carry some weight and show some good progress, then maybe the rest of the European nations and the Union will maybe want to reevaluate some of their trade negotiations as well.
Yeah, and it might be beneficial for the entire planet that we start moving down this path. One thing I think is really happening is this nationalism, this belief that we need sovereign countries to best look out for the interests of their people, and that this trend towards globalism has been overblown and not always beneficial to many of the parties involved.
I would agree with that sentiment. You think about it, think about a family. You know, I got my parents when I was growing up, and my parents cared first and foremost about me, my siblings, my family. You know, that didn't mean they caused any harm or stole from, say, their neighbors in order to look out for us. But it meant that they had their priorities and we needed to look after our unit first. And then after that, you start looking around your community. You start looking at your church or your school or your club, places that other you start expanding upon. And I think that's kind of how we need to look at is the diversification of power, essentially, to make sure that at the most local level, we're taking care of our people. And as we keep zooming out, that then means nationalism. And that then means America first, as opposed to, say, the rest of the countries first. And each country needs to do their thing. And I think in total, with respect to, hey, we're all humans living on this planet, then we all kind of get along. But we need to take care of our own first.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think we'll conclude on that note. If people want to find out more about you, TG, connect with you on the web, where's the best place to go?
SimplerTrading.com.
All right, SimplerTrading.com. As always, there's a link in the show notes to this interview. You can find out everything they do there. And questions or comments for TG, myself, as always, email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And of course, the site where you can sign up for the newsletter, free newsletter, is financialsurvivalnetwork.com. TG, always a pleasure. Appreciate you coming on. Happy holidays.
Absolutely. Had a great time.
Hey, and happy holidays and best wishes to you and yours for the coming year.
Thank you very much.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.